Hey, this is Claudio from Coheed and Cambria, and you're listening to Sound Session.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions here on WGNplus.com. I'm Michael.
And I am Kevin.
And I gotta just say, fresh off a headlining tour, which saw them play venues like Madison Square Garden in support of their new record, Coheed and Cambria are about to embark on a multi-city tour starting in September, and we welcome the one and only Claudio Sanchez to the show. Claudio, what's going on, man?
Hi, I'm good. Nothing really, just walking my dog.
Hey, all right. Hey, so Claudio, I'm reading, you're from New York. You guys have played Madison Square Garden. That's like a what a huge venue. What's that like for you guys being from New York?
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, like, you know, I grew up going to shows there, you know, to be able to play there, you know, both in support of other bands.
Sure.
But also, you know, to play, you know, our own headliner. I mean, it's just a real treat. Like, you know, especially like coming, you know, from nothing really, you know, from a van to a bus and small shows to that. I mean, it's a real like honor. It's one of those things. It's amazing.
That's so cool. And so which do you prefer, I guess? Do you prefer playing in that larger format venue where you can be maybe a little more grandiose in your stage presence and all that? Or do you like the smaller, more intimate venue?
Well, you know, a little bit of both. I mean, to be completely honest, I sort of prefer the larger venue just because there's like, it feels a little, you know, I'm a pretty shy, introverted individual. When you get into the smaller venues, you feel like you're under the microscope.
Huh.
You know, there's that personal connection, which is great to have with your audience. But, you know, that's why my hair is so long. It's like, I don't, you know, it's really like a curtain to like sort of hide behind. So sometimes when I'm in the bigger sort of settings, it feels like, you know, it feels like I'm kind of hiding in the space, if that makes any sense.
I hear you. I hear you on that. I mean, having that long hair must help. Not only are you metal as hell, it also is a good covering device.
Yeah, for sure.
So this new album, though, speaking upon that, The Color Before the Sun is the new album. Everyone should go check it out. This is your first non-conceptual album. It kind of comes from yourself and your own experiences. Is that a little scary now that you're putting out an album that you've kind of just wrote yourself and this is just reflecting on you rather than on, you know, the story of Coheed and Cambria or what else?
You know, I mean, at the age that I'm at right now, and you know, I think it made sense to sort of do that, to do it like this. You know, when I started the idea of Coheed and Cambria, however many years ago, you know, I had a hard time sort of confessing myself in the lyrics, and that's why I kind of created the concept. You know, so in a way, I'd always been doing it, but just I had a disguise to sort of hide behind. You know, with time, I definitely love that format and we'll probably continue doing it in the future, you know, writing songs inside this, you know, science fiction epic. But at this stage in my life, you know, it just made sense to do it, you know, to sort of lift back the curtain and allow the songs to kind of speak for themselves. You know, sure, there was a sense of vulnerability, but, you know, I think I'm more confident than I've ever been in my life at this stage. You know, becoming a dad, I think, had a lot to do with that.
Congratulations on that.
You know, and so, oh, thank you. So, yeah, I mean, you know, sure, I've definitely felt a sense of exposure. But again, there was a sense of confidence that came with this time in my life.
Right on. So what was the connection that you and your family had to music?
My mother was very much into pop music, you know,
yeah.
And so I found that, you know, when I was listening to the stuff my dad was into, you know, I wasn't singing along to it. You know, I was always listening for the guitars, I was listening for the way the music was sort of structured. And, you know, at the time I wasn't a musician, you know, I wasn't writing songs. It was just kind of like being exposed to the stuff. But when I got in the car with my mother and she was listening to this, you know, Michael Jackson, Taylor Dane,
sure,
Cyndi Lauper, stuff like that, I found myself singing to it, you know. So that, I think, is kind of where the two styles converged. You know, it was really just a kind of influence from my parents,
it,
you know. So, yeah.
It really works well. What about today? Who are you listening to today, or like who's some current bands that you're kind of impressed by?
You know, the one record that I'm still very much impressed by was it won a Grammy several years back. It was the artist's name is Bon Iver or
Oh
bon
yeah
Iver.
Yeah, I know
sure
exactly
how
what
you
talking
pronounce
about.
It. Yeah, that second record, I mean, was just, you know, when my wife introduced me to him, I was into him. But then she had asked me to sort of find that album, right? I think it was like the week before it was coming out or around that time it came out. And when I listened to that, I think I had even told her, I was like, this record will win a Grammy. And I still to this day am very much impressed by it. I just bought my like second copy of it. Because my wife and I, we just moved into another apartment and most of our vinyl is in storage.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, you know what? I gotta buy this again. You know, it's just one of those records that's just become like this staple that I've always sort of listened to.
Yeah, you know, that is such a great album too, but it really kind of contrasts into the music that you're writing today. Are you finding yourself, you know, when you have a little bit of downtime to be listening to bands like Bon Iver or, when we speak to bands, it's mostly they're listening to podcasts or something like that on the road, and they can't even take listening to music. What are you doing? What are you listening to on the road?
I mean, I don't, you know, for me, it's, I'm not really, like, I guess I'm kind of, you know, cut from that same cloth. I'm not really listening to a whole lot of music. I have, like, you know, a select few pieces of vinyl in our apartment that I listen to, certainly to more so to expose my son to music.
Mm-hmm. How cool is that?
You know, but at the time, yeah, I know. It's incredible. I mean, you know, I got, not to float my own boat, but his favorite album happens to be the new Coheed record. Maybe that's just because he's been around
sure.
for most of it, you know. But he always requests it in the morning with breakfast. For me, I think on the road, I tend to watch more television.
Okay.
I tend to read more books or comics, like just because that's usually what I'm doing out there is sort of creating and structuring new stories to hopefully tell.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about those books that you have penning down in your head and in your free time. We read that you are actually, after, you know, becoming a father and everything, writing a children's book called Kid Crazy and the Kilowatt King. What's the influence behind that, and how's that going so far?
Yeah, well, you know, that's actually coming out in October 14th.
Oh, mm-hmm. Awesome. Congrats.
I actually started writing that. Oh, thank you. But I actually started writing that before my son was born. And actually, I think even before we even realized we were pregnant with him. You know, I was actually in LA. I was staying in this hotel, and one morning I woke up. I had this idea that I wanted to do sort of this rock opera a la Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, or Rocky Horror Picture Show, or something like, you know, or Hedwig the Angry Inch. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to do something that involved more of the personality of a rocker in a concept record. But when I started to kind of come up with this concept and these ideas, it certainly took on a shape of its own and was no longer about, it didn't fall in that world anymore. It became more about this kid who longed to be a part of this bustling city called Ever. And found out that, you know, the king there was actually very rude and needed to be taught a lesson in manners and the value of the word please. So that's really it. It sort of became about that.
What a good life lesson,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a lesson for children.
That's so cool. Do you find that, because I know you're involved in other literature works, and from what I understand, the name Coheed and Cambria comes from one of your own literature works, and I know you've gotten involved in comic books, and we've talked to some other artists and musicians that have kind of done this similar path. Do you find that literature and music are kind of like an easy transition? Like, do they go hand in hand, do you think?
I mean, for me, certainly, because most of the time, it's all about my imagination. I mean, I was taking these real life stories and using, you know, my imagination to make them more grandiose. So what felt autobiographical then became, to some people, fictitious and, you know, fantasy. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it has a lot to do with your imagination. You know, music, when I listened to it, certainly when I was younger, it conjured up visuals and things, you know, that I could only see with my mind. And that's sort of what happens with literature. When you're reading these things, you're sort of putting these pieces together and sort of creating your own stage in your mind. So I guess in that way, for me anyway, they were very much linked, you know.
Sure.
You know, that's the thing, is like songs to me are stories, you know, regardless of whether they're conceptual, you know, whether they're conceptual and in a fictitious world, or if they're about someone and autobiographical, they're still stories, you know, so you can kind of use your imagination to put together what, you know, the lyricist is sort of saying to you, like you would with a book.
Yeah, that's so spot on, you know, because you can really tell that a lot of time goes into these albums that you put out, and a lot of the songwriting and the lyrics don't seem lazy. They seem very thought out and
calculated.
Very thoughtful. Claudio, what do you think of the state of the music industry now? I mean, when I was listening to you, it was a lot of rock bands who wrote these kind of great lyrics and everything, and now it just seems to be repetitive. I mean, what are your thoughts on EDM? Would you even get into that at all? Put a little bit of that on your albums or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm so open-minded when it comes to music. I mean, at one point in my life, I was like, you know, I had said some things that maybe were like, you know, I wish I had been part of a different era of music or blah, 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 blah. Maybe the band would have been accepted easier or so. You know, but that was young talk. Like, I was just not, you know, for me, like, truly, I'm very open-minded when it comes to music, when it comes to art. I see the good in everything, you know, if it's the worst piece of trash, like, there's something to learn from it. So I mean, I like EDM, I like electric dance music. I do a lot of programming with my other project. I'm a big fan of utilizing anything to make art, you know. So yeah.
That's cool. I want to know, well, let me go back. I saw you guys a few years back here in Chicago, maybe 2013, and the lineup was, you guys were the headliners, which was great because, you know, coming up through high school, listening to you guys. Then there was Between the Buried and Me, which through college, I kind of really found some passion in those guys. And then it was Local Boys Made Good, Russian Circles, who I'm a huge fan of currently. This is such like a all-star lineup for me. I want to know, how much say do you guys have in picking a lineup for a tour?
Oh, we have a lot of say. I mean, usually, you know, sometimes there's not a lot to draw from out there because they're just tours have already been set up for the most part. But like, you know, bands are certainly brought to our attention, and we sort of get to choose, like, you know, through, you know, whether or not they're available, the bands that will accompany us on tour. So, we have a big say.
Great. So what was the connection that you made with your upcoming tour going on with Saves the Day and Polyphia?
Well, Saves the Day, actually, their second record I'm a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought that Stay Who You Are record was tremendous.
It's a classic.
You know, we were actually at one point label mates.
That's right.
You know, we were both on Equal Vision Records out of Hudson, New York. Yeah. And that's the same thing with Polyphia. They are... they are an Equal Vision band, so in a way, we're kind of family. So it just made sense.
That's kind of cool. I also see on this upcoming tour, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a hard time here, there's no Chicago date. What's up with that?
You know, because the last tour that we did, there was a Chicago date. That's like what they do. You know, like sometimes the tour lineups, like, for example, the last tour, there was no Portland or Seattle.
Okay.
And this time there is, you know. It just happens to sort of... That's sort of how the booking agents kind of schedule them. They do the first run, they hit these markets, and then, you know, if there's time or, you know, and the band wants to tour, we try to construct another cycle out of the markets that we didn't hit the last time.
Okay, and I'm seeing, too, I guess if people here in the Chicagoland area do want to come check you out, looks like you're going to be in Grand Rapids, Michigan on October 8th, so you can make that drive reasonably. I also want to know, let's get into some of your sci-fi stuff and your literature. So what are some of those influences there? Did you grow up being like a Star Trek guy or like a Star Wars kid? What's your background there?
I mean, I was definitely a Star Wars kid. You know, I definitely like Star Trek. There's no dividing line for me.
Okay.
But Star Trek, I think, was a little bit more, it was exploratory. It was more, when I was into Star Wars, I was into the more fantasy. And I think that's just sort of the difference is, like, to me, Star Wars is a science fantasy, whereas, Star Trek is a science fiction.
Okay,
if that makes any sense.
No, I definitely see you.
That's, like, kind of the dividing lines. I grew up with Star Wars, and that was a huge, thing for me. I mean, Empire Strikes Back, where Han Solo gets cast in carbonite, I think is really the seed to why I wanted to write stories, because as a kid, that's what you did. You had your toys, and mm-hmm. these sort of events would happen, whether they be in Star Wars or in the Saturday morning cartoons that you were watching, and you would take your toys and you would sort of cosplay through what you thought was, your role play, what you thought would be the outcome of these characters' futures. So I think Han Solo being cast in carbonite was like a huge, huge moment in science fiction cinema that really influenced me into wanting to tell a sci-fi story.
That's really interesting
and
to me too,
thus,
because
creating the Amory Wars.
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting to me because the way you worded it, I got the impression that, that scene, you didn't know, what was coming up in the future movies or anything like that. Whereas I grew up, I could watch them all in a row if I wanted to. I knew what was coming up next. So that's interesting kind of hearing that you were, kind of acting out. What might be the outcome of this?
Absolutely. I mean, the 80s, I just did an MLB Network interview earlier today, and we were talking about the Mets and the Mets.
Hmm.
I'm not a big baseball guy. In the 80s, I was a big baseball guy just because I was younger and that was my interest. But I just think about that era of cartoons, for example, G.I. Joe, He-Man, Transformers. I mean, all of these cartoons were sort of created as commercials for the toys that they really wanted to sell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I think about even sports. And in 1985, you had the Chicago Bears with the Super Bowl Shuffle.
That's
I'm not from Chicago. I'm not from Chicago, but that was my favorite football team. They had great marketing behind them.
Right.
So it was and then with the Mets in 86, and I can still remember all the players in the lineup, and it's the 80s, I think, in general, is just a great time for character-driven stories. And ultimately just really what influenced the way I sort of aspire to tell story. Indiana Jones was huge for me. I don't know,
cool.
Krull. Do you guys ever see Krull?
I don't, do you know Michael? I'm not.
K-R-O-L-L?
K-R-U-L-L.
No, I'm not
familiar.
Oh, Krull. It's like a sci-fi / medieval story where this main character finds, much like a lightsaber, he finds the glaive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this super, it's almost like a Chinese star kind of, but it's, you should see Krull.
I'm going to take
so
a note.
That was another one that was a huge influence on me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, just that era of fiction, E.T., all of that stuff was just, huge.
Yeah.
It was just huge inspiration to me as a creator.
What were some of those, what was that favorite toy that you had back in the day? Because now I'm getting a little bit of flashback, and I remember the first toy that I was really excited for in Christmas was that He-Man sword, as young as I was. What was your, most cherished toy back in those days from the 80s?
A He-Man. You just, say He-Man, I needed to have everything He-Man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was like a huge, I have a photograph my mother and father took of me when I was a kid, and it's my brother and I with Snake Mountain and Castle Grayskull and a bunch of the rod. I mean, we were spoiled in that department. I think, we came from a pretty we were middle class family, but
sure.
My parents really they were so about giving like feeding our imaginations,
mm-hmm.
But because they were so busy with their life, but they wanted, they gave so much to us, and I think they really helped fuel my imagination, like with things, with these tools to help sort of create story. He-Man, I think, was my favorite.
That's so true. You know, it's the things that your parents do for you. You kind of look back and you're like, oh, so maybe, you know, because my mom gave me the He-Man sword, I thought of this. And because she brought me to this camp, I was able to get through this. And, you know, it really is an amalgamation of everything to create these albums, which is, it speaks to a person who, like you, Claudio, who takes their life and makes it about the music. I mean, you gave up, you know, the chance to be a doctor to go on the road and play music, and look at it, how it's worked out for you. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I probably should have become a doctor. you know, it's like, I got to tell you, sometimes I get asked the question of like, what's some advice you can give to artists coming up or musicians or what have you. And I think it's just, or what's your best tool, like, that you take out on the road or any of these things. And it always really leads back to my imagination. You know, again, like I'm very introverted, very withdrawn. Again, when I bring up the toy stuff, it's like, you know, my mother still says to this day, as we play with my son, you know, because he plays alone in the corner by himself. She's like, you used to do the same thing. You know, you would play for hours alone, like, no, you wouldn't be bothered, like, didn't need anything. You just would play, like, and that's all about, like, I do that now. I do that in my, you know, my room with my, you know, with my Pro Tools, and you know, all I need is a door and a window and that stuff. And it's like, I can get into my own head and not be bothered and create, you know, characters that I can give voices to, you know, and all sorts of, you know, and music. And it's really me at 38 playing with toys right now. You know, that's what me doing music is.
That's really well put, and very cool. It's a nice insight into your mind a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know? I want to know what's next for you, and what's next for the band, big picture here.
You know, I mean, the touring is certainly happening, and that'll probably close out the year. But, you know, we've started writing. You know, it was kind of accidental. You know, Josh was going to go into the studio and cut some drums to this covers record that we sort of loosely discussed doing. And, you know, I kind of fell out of love with the idea because, you know, we had talked about it several months ago. And I was like, well, you know, hold on one second. Before you go in there, let me see if I have anything that we can maybe use that's original. And it turned out my wife was leaving for 3 days to go visit her, some family up north. And I had the house to myself, so I wrote a few songs. And so now we're kind of going through the writing process of a new record. So I think we're writing, if that answers the question.
That's great. That's great, because writing seems to be the theme that is keeping everything positive and moving it along the track.
Certainly.
Claudio, we can't thank you enough.
Totally.
Can't thank you enough for joining us, man. This was fantastic. Be sure to check out their new album, The Color Before the Sun, which is available now. Check them out on tour with all the dates that they have going on throughout the United States. And Claudio, thank you so much for joining us today here on Sound Sessions.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. 'Cause you're going home. You're riding free, as only you would be if you never owed them anything. And now you found your way out in the trust.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.